Hey, hey, hey. Stripe Show Pod is live on Twitter and YouTube. Thank you for being here. I can see us out there. How about it? Love it. Good stuff. Welcome into the studio. We've got a great lineup here on the podcast, All Things Players Championship. My guests are coming in as we speak. There he is, Monday Q, Ryan French. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Travis.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being here. Just waiting for Colt Nost here as he rolls on. We'll get started.
Sounds good.
The first live show, Ryan.
Is it really? All right.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, so the pod is...
The studio's looking great.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been fun putting it together. There he is.
Awesome.
Yes.
What's happening?
Hey.
What's going on?
What's up, Colt?
How much.
How we doing?
We've never officially met. I'm Ryan.
Wanted hey, Ryan. Good to see you. Can everybody... Y'all can hear me okay?
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Perfect.
I was just telling Ryan, this is the first live edition. You know, we always tape it, post it. Audio, video, but we're going live today.
You got quite the studio.
Yeah,
that's what I just said. That's what I was like.
Damn,
that's where I
damn.
Teach. You know, so I just put some neon lights at it, decorated it up. It turned out good.
I like it. That's nice.
Yeah, thank you. All right, you guys ready?
I'm always ready.
Here we go. Thanks for being here. A little intro. And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Sunday night. That's the first time that I've ever said that since the year and a half existence of the podcast. We're coming to you live on Twitter at Travis Fulton, YouTube at Travis Fulton Golf. And, of course, you can catch it on all of the audio platforms that you wish throughout the week. This is going to be fun. All Things Players Championship played right down my road here from the studio. As Scotty Scheffler not only wins, but he flexes a little bit. Five-shot win over Terrell Hatton. And joining me here, two guys that know a thing or two about golf. One of them at the bottom there, the former course record holder of TPC Sawgrass.
How depressing.
So, Colton knows. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
The one thing I had in this game, and Tom Hoagie just had to rip it away from me. It was a bad day yesterday, but congrats to Tom. That was an impressive round of golf.
I mean, my goodness, what a perfect storm. I mean, 62-62, but, you know, the rain, soft condition, those pins were – I mean, he goes out. I mean, look, he's plus two, right? He's thinking he's going home. And it extends to him. He's like, shit, I got to play. He goes out there and shoots 62. It's unbelievable.
Can we talk about how everything like went his way? Obviously, the weather, the soft conditions. He got to finish on the front nine. John Rahm withdraws. And, I mean, let's be honest. John Rahm was going to make the cut. Moves that number to T66. Is what it is. It was a good run. Happy for Tom Hoagie. It hurts being an SMU Mustang that a TCU Horn Frog is the one who knocked me out of there. But congrats to Tom. What a week. I mean, talk about taking advantage and making a cut, going out there and finishing, I think, T3.
Yeah, T3. Followed up with 70 today. We're going to talk about Tom Hoagie. They finished with Victor Hovland. I got a question about Victor's game for you boys. I'm curious to see what we have to say. But also joining me here, one of the best follows in all of golf. You know him as Monday Q. He has a real name. His name is Ryan French. Ryan, how you doing, bud?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on, Travis. I appreciate it.
I'm going to start with you. Players Championship, you watch that. Scotty's dominance. How'd the tournament fall for you?
Yeah, I mean, Scotty and John are obviously the best two players in the world right now. So I mean, it was a little boring. Let's be honest. It was kind of over at about, I don't know, officially over about 10, it felt like, when Minwoo had a chance. But, I mean, the guy is just absolute stones. He's just so good. I don't know what else you can say about him. If he's not the favorite in the Masters, I don't know. There would be no surprise. And shout out to Ted Scott, who would be like 12th in FedEx Cup points if it was dollars for dollars. I mean, that dude is doing well for himself.
I mean, did anybody make a better decision than Ted Scott over the last 15 months? I mean, nobody, right? I mean, this guy, he can see the future, this guy. I mean, you know, obviously had a good run with Bubba. Bubba goes to live, gets hurt, and now he jumps over to Scotty and six wins, green jacket, Players' Championship. I mean, this guy just got it figured out.
Honestly, he should have had a FedEx Cup title as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he had that one in full control and let it go to Rory McIlroy. But, yeah, good business decision for Ted Scott. He is raking it in. But they make such a great team. Ted's perfect for him because, you know, Scotty seems cool, calm, and collected out there. But he can get a little hot under the collar. He can get a little down on himself. No. And Teddy's the most positive guy there is. And so it's a dream team.
Stop. You just said Scotty Scheffler can get hot under the collar.
He doesn't show it that much, but I've known the kid since he was 6 years old.
You've seen it.
I've seen it. I've seen it all with when it comes to Scotty. But man, I'm so happy for him. I met him when him and his family moved from New Jersey to Dallas when he was 6 years old. Joined Royal Oaks Country Club where I grew up playing throughout college, working with the great Randy Smith right there in Dallas. So.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this champion develop throughout his years, and it's been something special to watch. You know, I knew he was going to be good. I didn't know it was going to be at this level.
Let's talk about Randy Smith for a second. I'll stay with you, Cole, because, you know, my background is the instruction side. And I had Randy on right after his first win at the Phoenix Open. And we had a really good conversation. Randy doesn't do a lot of those. He gave me some time. It was very well received. And I watch Randy and the way that he interacts with Scotty. He was out there yesterday after that sensational round. They were hitting a few balls. The one thing you see with Randy and his players, you worked with Randy. Justin Leonard, of course, worked with Randy. Ryan Palmer, as I understand, has worked with Randy. And, of course, Scotty, you look at all these swings. They all look different. Randy's out on the range. He's not standing there usually with a launch monitor and filming every swing. He's just kind of standing there watching ball flight, having a conversation with Scotty. He's a little old school, but when you define the word coach, I think he's one of the all-time greats.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with it. I have a very special relationship with Randy Smith. He, like you said, he's old school. I always laughed when TrackMan first came out. I mean, he got one, tried to work it. He's always like, this thing's broken. Like, I have a bad one. He just couldn't figure out. By the way, the fact that you got him on a podcast is impressive because he definitely doesn't know how to work Zoom or any of those other streaming things you need to actually do an interview.
Let's just say there was two or three people in the room trying to figure out how to get the phone. Yeah. And they finally did. And he's like, can you see me? Can you hear me? I said, I got you. And I'll take care of you. All you got to do is answer my questions. That's it.
Yeah. Technology is not his friend. There's no doubt. But, you know, I texted him last night. I said, y'all go finish it off tomorrow, and he said, there's no doubt this kid's going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like he said, the second he saw Scotty Scheffler at 6 years old, he knew it was something special about him. You know, they talked about it a little bit on the broadcast today, how he used to follow all the tour guys around. He would just sit on the bucket of balls when Randy would give one of us a lesson and just sit there for an hour and listen and go out and then replicate it. I one of my favorite stories to tell is I was sitting down in the practice bunker at Royal Oaks one day, hitting bunker shots for 30 or 40 minutes, and he's 7 or 8 years old, and he's sitting there watching, asking questions, all this. I'm hitting some shots. I get out of the bunker to go pick up the balls, and all of a sudden I see this sand fly up. I mean, he's so little, you can't even see his head from the lip of the bunker. And all of a sudden I see this ball come out, land, and like spin. And I was like, what in the hell was that? Mm-hmm. And I go, Scotty, how did you do that? He goes, I was just watching, and I just learned. Like, that's how he was. I mean, he paid attention to everything. He was so into it. He always wanted to be around the pros, followed him everywhere, always wanted to have putting contests. He's special, man. He's not a kid anymore. I mean, he's a grown-ass man. He's married, and he's got a rather nice bank account now.
But it wasn't all easy. I mean, I saw your tweet, Ryan. I saw your tweet about him missing Monday qualifiers on the Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, it wasn't like he just came out of Texas. I mean, keep in mind, when he was at Texas, he was like the third player on the team. I mean, Bo Hossler was a year ahead of him, but he played one. Doug Gim played mostly two, and then Scheffler. You know, so it wasn't like he was the number one player in college, came out, walked his way through the Corn Ferry Tour. There was some struggle there, too.
Yeah, I get asked, probably the question I get asked the most is, like, if a top player had to go through Mondays, and I'm not trying to pretend like 2018 Scotty is today's Scotty, but he's obviously super talented. And, yeah, I put the tweet up today. He went 1-for-7 and missed the cut and the only one he got through. And I don't think he had a score under par in any of that. And so it's like, again, it's a thin margin. Obviously went on to Q school, got through, but he played, I think 5 or 6 all pro tour events, didn't win, didn't get through, you know, 6 of 7 Monday qualifiers. And then, like, if he has a bad round at Q school, where's Scotty Scheffler now? Like, obviously he's super talented. He would have made it. There's no doubt about that, but it's like, the margin between making it and not making it is so razor thin. Like, he has a bad round at the second stage his first year. At the very least, he's set back a year, right? So it's just the thin margin. It's also obviously a look into how difficult the Mondays are. I always use the stat, Utah Monday qualifier for the Corn Ferry event. It's a super easy course. It's always like 12 spots at one site. I think 63 gets through as the last spot every year. And Will Zalatoris and Scotty Scheffler both shot 66 and missed by 3. So it's like they're on the leaderboard in the 2018 Utah, which is an event no one goes to. So the Monday's like a quote unquote easy Monday. And it's Will Zalatoris and Scotty Scheffler, T19, missed by 3. And no one knew, you know, that it would obviously, again, they're both very talented. It's not like a shock that they're, but to look to how hard Mondays are, and that can easily be set back another year, miss at Q school or miss at a Monday or don't take advantage of a Monday.
Yeah. They're razor thin. You watch Scotty, he comes out. I think it seems like, Colt, there's always a moment in a player's career where you kind of benchmark, right? You're like, okay, wow, I'm actually as good as that guy is, you know? And was it for Scotty, the Ryder Cup, he gets picked, and he beats John Rahm in singles, and he shakes his hand. And since that moment, he's won 6 times, you know, in 13 months, 6 times in 13 months. It just felt like that was the moment where it was like, okay, I'm really that good. Like, I am that good that I can go head to head with the bull and take him down. And ever since that time, those two have been going back and forth. Like, you know, Rory's kind of in there a little bit, you know, but he's got a lot of board meetings and whatnot, but those two are 1 and 2.
I agree with you that was the moment I think everything turned around for him. I said going into that match, you know, I always like to look at the gambling odds and see like how they match these guys up. And Scotty was a pretty big underdog. And I told everyone, I was up there at the Ryder Cup, and I said, do not be surprised if this kid goes out there and takes it to John Rahm. And then I think that just springboarded him, gave him so much confidence, and led into what we saw last year and why he went on that run. He's like, listen, this is the number one player in the world. Everybody expects him to drum me, and it was actually the exact opposite. He went out and drummed him, and, you know, that was a huge, huge thing for his confidence. But I just go back. The kid's a winner. You know, they said it on the broadcast today. I think they said 74 times or something, but I know, like, overall, he won over 90 junior golf tournaments. You know, he's won at every single level he's been at. And, like, that's something – when you know how to win, you know how to close out tournaments, I think it doesn't matter what level you're at. You just know what that feeling is like, whether it's Corn Ferry, whether it's college, whether it's junior golf. Like, those nerves are there coming down the stretch. And when you prove it time after time, when you have a chance to win, that you can do it, it continues to carry over and continues to give you more confidence. And, I mean, you know, he didn't get off to the best start today, made the bogey at 3. All of a sudden, Lee was right there, tied for the lead, and he had the disaster at 4. But it just never looked like Scotty was ever uncomfortable the entire day, in my opinion. He got hot in the middle of the round. And then he just, I mean, like Ryan said, it was kind of boring to watch. Like, it was disappointing because, like, I want the kid to win. I root for him. I'm a fan of his. But this is one of my favorite golf tournaments to watch on TV because the finish is so exciting. And I was like, at number 9, I was like, this thing's over.
It's over.
Like, this sucks. But
he really never hit it.
Scotty Scheffler, who made $4.5 million.
He really never hit a good shot until that chip in on number 8. I mean, he hit a lot of holes. You know, he just wasn't even – he looked like he was a little nervous is what he looked like. He wasn't in his zone yet, and he gave him a window there to come close the lead. Lee tried and then made the big number on four, which I think still continues to be one of the best holes in golf, number four at TPC Sawgrass. It's just an absolute gem. But yeah, you're right. It was boring. And I'll come back to you, Ryan, with this. This is probably the first tournament. I mean, what are we now? We're at least 15 minutes into this before we mention this, these next three letters. This is probably the first tournament that I felt like I was missing the guys that left for Lyft. It was the first time I was like, you know, I was missing Cam, the defending champ. I'm missing DJ, you know, like I'm just missing those guys. And I still watch them and this and that. But it was the first time I felt like in this tournament, which we know TPC Sawgrass can thin them out, right? I mean, it's just one of those courses where you're going to see names like a David Lingmerth pop up who you don't necessarily see on the first page. Also often Minwoo Lee, Adam Svensson, who's coming on and playing well. But it's just one of those courses where you do get a wide range of names. And so I thought it would get thinned out a little bit, and it did. And I felt like I was missing those boys. How'd it hit for you?
You know, there's a lot of times that Liv is kind of like just so far off. And again, I think Liv is ahead of where anyone thought they would be if you said 18 months ago. But I didn't really think about it until Dan Hicks slipped up and said he called Cam Dave Smith, and I was like, oh, that's right, the defending champ is not here. And it was obviously Freudian slip, but I mean, it's like pretty funny. I say the same thing about Liv all the time, is they took so many villains. That's where I think golf misses it. If it was Scotty and Patrick Reed coming down the stretch and they were close and every runs would be rooting for Scotty, that's where I think we missed some of the guys that went to Liv. You know, Bryson was loved to be hated. And, you know, I think we miss again, those guys, especially Bryson's not playing well enough to be, even if he was on tour, but he wouldn't be in contention the way he's playing now. But I just think we miss the answer, Travis, for me is no, but if they were here, we would appreciate how much better it was. Like the villains, I miss the villains. Like at the Waste Management, I was like, Scotty's a really nice dude. Nick Taylor's a really nice dude. They like each other. They're respectful. It would be so great if it was like Scotty and Patrick Reed, or Scotty and Bryson coming down at the Players or Waste Management or the U.S. Open. Obviously, it can happen at the U.S. Open, but
Tiger and Sergio, Tiger taking off the head cover at the right like, moment.
Everybody kind of likes each other.
Yeah,
everybody's kind of gone on their team, and it's kind of left like everybody on their own team likes each other on their own team, and we're missing some of the like you know, rivalries.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I do miss the villains being out there, but I would counter with this, Travis. Like, if that final group is Scottie Scheffler, you know, Rory McIlroy, Max Homa, you're probably not missing those guys. You're going to be locked in and be like, okay, this is about to be an incredible day of golf at an awesome golf course.
Yeah. No, that's fair. You know, I just think like when the pool of great players, right? And they took some great players. I think, for example, Joaquin Niemann, you know, two top 25s the last 2 years, this place, like that's the kind of caliber. Mito Pereira, you know, those are the kind of guys that who for all intents and purposes could be in the mix, right? Like that quality of player. Players Championship over the years, best field in golf. And now you lose some of those players. And to me on this golf course is where it kind of shows up, you know, the quality of players. So yeah, but you're right. No, you're right. And I'm all in on these elevated events for sure. I'm curious though, on the tone of the golf course, Colt, TPC Sawgrass, just the Florida swing in general, be as honest as you can with my audience. You've got the Honda, you've got Bay Hill, you've got TPC Sawgrass, you got Copperhead, right? Those four tough tracks. You come over to Florida, you better be ready. What's the general feel for the players? Do they like the Florida swing, or do they feel like, I could probably do without those two courses, you know, go over there in general. What do you think?
You know, I think the Florida guys and the guys that grew up on Bermuda really like it. You know, Bay Hill is always a very exciting golf tournament because it plays so difficult, and it's obviously the King Arnold Palmer's tournament. So like you respect that, but as far as the golf course, I don't think they're huge fans of Bay Hill. Yeah. Honda's too damn stressful. There's water everywhere. The wind blows 30. It's really not that enjoyable to play. TPC Sawgrass, I think, is one of the best golf courses we have on PGA Tour. And I just say that because I think anyone can win there. Any type of game can win there. It's not like we go to Riviera where only bombers contend, or San Diego where only bombers contend. Like, this is a guy where we've seen Fred Funk win. We've seen Phil Mickelson win. We've seen Cam Smith hit it all over the lot and win last year. I like when any of the guys, no matter what style of game they play, can win. And then you go to Innisbrook, which the Copyright course, I think it's one of the most underrated courses we play all year out there. It's fantastic. It's got a tough spot in the schedule. But that's a good golf course, man. It's hard, but it's fair.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, a lot of the guys have skipped Honda over the years. You had the support from maybe some of the Southern Florida guys. You look at Bay Hill last week. A lot of those guys didn't play there. You look at, now they had to play there with the elevated event. Of course, they're going to play TPC. But you do see some of the pretty good field next week at Valspar in a non-elevated event. I think Spieth is there. JT's there. Burns. And so it's going to hold its course. But I'm just always curious. I know the majority probably would rather not play Bay Hill, but do you think TPC, the majority, like it?
I mean, in my opinion, yes. Okay. I think they do. It's a fun golf course. It's a little quirky, but it's one of those ones. I think Rory actually said it rather nicely. Like, listen, when you're on your game, you can get it. But when you're not, it's going to punish you, and you're going to make some big numbers. And I think that defines a great golf course. Like, you can't just go out there and slap it around and bring your B game and expect to shoot 67, 68. Like, you got to hit fairways. You got to miss it in the right spot around the greens to get it up and down. If you don't, you're going to make a lot of bogeys and a lot of big numbers. I mean, saw Max McGreevy shoot 69, 89. Saw Trey Mullinex, who's been playing some really good golf, shoot 85. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just what happens around this place. That's why, like, no lead's safe. Like, Scottie Scheffler's got a 5-shot lead. He's a world-class player, so he's probably going to get it done, but there's still always that doubt in the back of your mind, like, okay, I mean, we've seen it happen on 17. Am I going to be that guy this year? Am I going to be the guy that makes 12 or 13 and removes Bob Tway's name from the record book?
69-89. I'm pretty sure I've done that, actually, that course.
I'll tell you a funny story real quick. So one of my very good friends, him and his group, there's like four or five of them, they have sponsored Max McGreevy for ever since he got going turning pro. They recently just stopped because he got his card and he's good on money now, but they're texting me, and I thought they were joking. They were like, par finished to shoot 88 or something like that. And I'm like, ha ha, funny. And he said, has anybody ever shot 69-90 in the players? I wasn't even paying attention. I was out playing golf. I pull up my phone and he doubled number 8 to go to 18 over. I'm like, oh my God, this might actually happen. We might have a guy shoot 69-90 in the players.
To be fair, that's a clutch birdie.
Huge. I mean, huge.
Clutch birdie on 9. And if it was a no-cut event, the on Saturday would have broken the internet.
Yeah, I'm with you. That you're right. That was because I believe the highest round ever at the Players is 89. So at least he's tied now. He doesn't own it solo.
89. Whew. My goodness, that's a big number for me. That's a huge number for you guys.
And it's not like it was blowing 40 out there.
No, it wasn't blowing 40. So, Rob, let me ask you this. I look at this leaderboard. I saw you tweet out about Cam Davis, not Cam Smith. Cam Davis. I was glad to see Cam Davis play well. I was 5 missed cuts coming in. I met his coach when I was out in Palm Springs from Australia. And I just felt like something was wrong. Like he was playing awful golf. I mean, just terrible golf. And his coach didn't lead anything on, but come to find out, I think he was battling an illness of some sort, and now he's past it. And now he's feeling 100% again. And he came out, he lost some money down the stretch there, as many did. But he did finish, looking at it here, up to date, T6. So that's a nice check for him. But this is another guy that's had quite the journey to get to this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's my account, if you follow it, is kind of like, remember the journey here. And actually a good friend of mine who I've caddied for a few times on tour, Mark Baldwin, was playing with him at the 3M Monday. Mark had Monday'd in and he was in danger of, Cam was in danger of losing his card. Came to the last hole. He was like 2 inside of the cut line and ends up making a triple and him getting knocked out moved the cut line, and there was guys behind the green who were obviously cheering for somebody who was, you know, got moved inside, and they were like running around screaming, and you know, this guy's going to lose his card, just made a triple to miss the cut. And it's like, and he ended up losing his card, but getting it back in Corn Ferry. It's just like, and Mark was like, there's no one around except for these like five people that are screaming and celebrating. And like, I mean, it's pro golf in a nutshell, the lot of stuff you never see, on TV. Like this guy's at one of the lower moments, I would assume, in his pro career. And, you know, loses his card, and now he's finishing T6 at the Players. So,
yeah.
It's just, and again, like what happens to Cam if he doesn't go to the Corn Ferry Finals that year and get his card back, you know? So, it's just, again, that razor thin margin, as Colt knows way better than I. He's played it, and Travis, you're around it. So it's just like, you know, one moment here, one moment there can make it for any guys either way.
Well, it's razor thin getting out there, and then once you're out there and you're playing well, and even some of the best players of our time, and I go to Jordan Spieth, who I know you're good friends with, Colt. You know, Jordan looks finally comfortable again, and you know, it still looks a little bit mechanical at times and what he's working on, but for all intents and purposes, he's got his game back. But he went through 3 years where it was like, wow, you know, how does Jordan Spieth lose his game? I mean, this is an absolute genius in playing the game of golf. And that's how razor thin it is for him, just losing his game versus playing like we've seen now. Colt, I got to tell you, I sent a tweet out when he hit it in the bunker on, I think it was Friday or something, on 12. And I said, you know, everybody get to their TV. It's must watch TV. When Jordan Spieth's in a greenside bunker, it's must watch TV. You have to get to the TV because he's the best bunker player with my own eyes I've ever seen.
I mean, around the greens, it's disgusting, some of the shots he has. I think the easy ones, you know, he doesn't pay attention quite as much, and he kind of might make a little silly sometimes. The hard ones, like, I don't know if there's anybody else in the world I would want hitting a very difficult shot around the green than Jordan Spieth. Mm-hmm. A 40-yard bunker shot, no green to work with. A flop shot over a bunker, no green to work with. Like, those are the ones that just, it gets his attention, his imagination lights up, and he hits these just miracle shots. I've seen it since he was 16 years old. It's special. That's just something you're born with, in my opinion. I mean, you can go work your ass off all you want, but like, you've got those God-given hands that you can just hit shots that other people can't, and that's what Jordan Spieth does.
It was a shot on 11. It was that back pin front. He was in the front, and he carried it all the way back. He carried it back there. He took the spin off, and it ran out like a putt to pin high. It's like, this is, how did he hit that and take the spin off and make it run up the hill? It's like, it doesn't even make sense.
Well, you know, listen, and other players know that. You know, I was on the call for CBS at Pebble Beach, and Jordan hit it over the green on number 8 at Pebble, which we all know is absolutely dead. And I'm on air saying it's dead. My phone vibrates. It's Justin Thomas. He goes, give me 12-1. He chips it in. And I'm like, that, because Justin Thomas knows, like, there's probably a pretty damn good chance this shot's pretty much impossible that Jordan's going to chip it in. And I'm like, deal, you got it. I'll take your action. And he damn near did. It went right over the edge of the hole. But everyone knows, like, I mean, it's terrifying when Jordan Spieth has a wedge in his hands around the greens, because you know it's going to definitely scare the hole if not go in.
There's a lot of comeback players right now. I mean, Spieth has fought his way back. Ricky Fowler has fought his way back. I think Jason Day has fought his way back in playing great golf again. You know, there's a lot of cool stories that's not always the case. You know, guys lose their game and then all of a sudden they go away. You know, they may not be the same version of themselves winning 3 major championships like Spieth did in such a short period of time. But, you know, they're factors again, which I think is huge for the tour right now, that you've got those guys relevant again. Because they carry a lot of name value. All right, a little true or false. Ready for this? Victor Hovland finished T3. Victor Hovland right now is a better player this year, better version of himself playing than he was last year at this time.
Whew. Ryan?
Colt, come on. These, like, if you gave me a random player, I could answer. I'm going to say... Man, he just hasn't been. I don't. That's such in the middle. True? ish.
I think it's very similar. Like, I don't think there's much difference right now. Like, there's always the work on the short game and everything. The ball striking always seems to be there. You know, I don't think he's massively different or massively better than he was a year ago. So, I mean, I guess, you know, maybe statistically he's slightly better, but he's still got a lot of work to do on that short game.
Yeah, he does. It's interesting. He was fourth last year, fourth at Genesis, second API, ninth at the Players. I mean, this is kind of his deal. Like, he plays strong through here. Now, this year, 20th at Genesis, 10th at API, obviously T3 for Players. Just kind of mad at him, Colt, in Ryan. Like he's jumping around a little bit. You know, he was with Jeff Smith for a long time. I thought they did some great work. I mean, I thought he was going the right way. And then he leaves, and now he's with Joe Mayo, who's a great, you know, he's a brilliant mind, great coach. I scratch my head. You know, like, why? Like, you're going.
Players bounce around all the time to different coaches, trying to figure out that secret. But I think you read off that stretch of Riviera, Bay Hill, and Sawgrass, three golf courses that, like I said earlier, you can't fake it around. You got to be on your game. You got to ball strike it to death. And I mean, Victor Hovland hits it in the middle of the face as often as anybody. So therefore, like, when it becomes a ball striking contest, he's always going to be there.
Yeah.
When there's probably a good reason he doesn't play American Express, where you got to go shoot 25, 26 under. Like, that's not his kind of golf course.
Minwoo Lee, T5. What'd you make of that guy? You talked about the villains, Ryan. I watched Minwoo. That dude's an entertainer. I enjoyed watching him. That guy is entertaining. He's a little cocky. He got a little flair to him. I dig it.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago or one last year. I followed Minwoo at the Honda Monday, and at the turn, he was playing with Robert Allenby and someone else, like a bigger name, and they all withdrew at the turn. The entire group disappeared at the Honda Monday. They were all like even, and Minwoo's like, I'm going to leave, and Allenby's like, yeah, I'm probably going to leave too. And then the other guy who's like, now the odd guy out, is like plus one. He's like, I'm not going on. But I mean, he's obviously super talented. He's going to get a bunch of sponsors exemptions. He's close on non-member points. He's a stud. So I don't think it'll be long until he's up there. Obviously the driver, and Colt will know better than I do, but driver's an issue. Yeah. He doesn't use it, and the times he did use it, it was not good. So, but he hits it a mile. I mean, he was hitting irons and three woods. So I'm not sure it is a problem, but, he's going to be a,
how about this run? He's 50th in the world right now. Okay. So you go back to the Masters last year, he finished 14th, 27th at the U.S. Open, and 21st at the Open. I mean, he's got, he likes the big stage. Like, he's kind of got that flair to him, and he's not afraid to go out there and show it. I watch him. His driver's an issue. You can't beat Scottie Scheffler. You cannot beat Scottie Scheffler without hitting your driver. You're not doing it. You know, you're just giving up too much. You've got to get that driver ironed out. His iron game is really good. I think he's got a little dog in him around the greens. His short game is pretty stout, and clearly the putter works. So, I don't know. I felt like Colt, maybe he got a little – I thought his course management was a little iffy at times today and what he was trying to do. So I'm sure there's a little bit of that maturity process as he plays in some of these big events, and he's seeing Scotty and he's seeing some of these bigger names that, you know, I need to clean up maybe a little here and there if I want to be at that level. But in today's game, you cannot put your driver away. Can you?
You know, I feel like if you're going to do it, this golf course is one of those places you can, especially when you have 170 mile an hour ball speed with a long iron. That's just insane. Like, the first time I ever saw him hit a golf ball was actually at Pebble Beach. He got a sponsor exemption a few years ago, and my buddy Bill Harkey, who's been out there forever caddying on the PGA Tour, was working for him. And so I went over to say hi to him, and he's like, meet Minwoo Lee. And I watched him swing, and it was also on number 8, which I brought up about Pebble, and I watched him hit this shot, and I'm like, my God, that golf swing is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But I'd never seen him hit a driver, so I didn't know he had 190 mile an hour ball speed. Like, that's insane. And then to hit that iron 170 – he's got a lot of talent. There's no doubt about it. You know, I honestly didn't really question his course management today. I think he just hit a bad shot at the wrong time. Like, on number 4, which you said is one of your favorite holes in golf, he misses the fairway. He laid it up, and then he just hit a god-awful wedge that spun back in the water, and he makes seven. Like he made the right play.
Then he turns, on five, he hits the driving iron. He's too far back. Like, you're just too far back.
I agree. The driver's a weapon for him if he's hitting it straight. And so, you've got to use it. Obviously, number 11, he hit it 9 miles left and then just absolutely butchered that hole.
And then he lays up on nine. Like, just bust the 3-wood up there. Just get it, just bust it up there anywhere close. And you, with that pin, you can get it up and down. I don't know. There's a few questions. I was just like, I don't understand what I'm looking at. But on three, his caddy was saying, look, center of the green, and he fought him on it, and he took it on and missed it. He did get it up and down. They seem to be a little out of sync, maybe those two, I think. And then he kind of came back to him, and then on nine, he laid up. Where on nine, I was with Kurt Byrum. I was like, send it. Hit the 3-wood up there and then find it and get it up and down.
No, I agree, but I think there's a lot going on in that young man's mind right now, obviously. Coming in at 50th in the world, the cutoff for the Masters is coming up very soon. He finished 14th there last year, so he just missed out on it. He needed a fourth place finish to get special temporary membership. Like, there's a lot of things going on there. Like, I got a lot to play for here. I'm five back of Scottie Scheffler. He's probably not going to come backwards. Like, I'm going to have to do something really special. But at the same time, if I just finish this off and finish decent, like, I'm going to earn a lot of stuff that I didn't have before the start of this week.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I didn't think about the 50th Colt, but definitely a special temporary membership. I mean, like, once Scotty gets way ahead, obviously you don't want to, like, give up with nine holes left. But you also have to protect, like, A, your top 10, because he's in Valspar now and a chance to earn more points, or just earn the points outright here. So it has to be, especially late, it has to be in your head. I mean, like, on 17, he makes a birdie. Gave himself a chance to get special temporary membership with a birdie on 18. So it's like, you got to protect a little bit. So if you're uncomfortable over a 3-wood on 9, and you're going to make 5 at worst most of the time by laying up, again, there's a lot going on. I would love to see if he hits 3-wood, if he already had, he was either a member or had special temporary membership locked up, what he does on 9.
Yeah.
You know, along those same lines, look at what Taylor Montgomery did with his finish today. I mean, he's 56th in the world coming into this week. He was up to 10 under and in fourth place. Bogeyed 15, doubled 16, quad on 17. I believe he bogeyed 18 to finish like 40-something. Like, that four-hole stretch cost him a spot in the Masters. If he pars out there, he finishes T4, he's in the top 50 in the world. Hmm. It's a cruel game.
And for those people who don't know, Taylor Montgomery has had enough of heartbreak in this game. He missed his card 2 years in a row by 1 point or one stroke over an entire season. So this is not unusual. Hopefully he knows how to – I don't know if you can ever, as a player, know how to deal with that. But the guy is super, super talented and has had a lot of heartbreak in this game.
Let's go there today. How much money did he just cost himself? He comes up, he birdies 14, which is, that's an incredible birdie in itself. 14 is an absolute beast. And then he goes bogey on 15, double 16, makes a quad on 17 and throws just a pile of money away. He's a talented guy. He was one of the guys that we talked a lot about, one of the guys coming from the Korn Ferry Tour. I really liked him and Davis Thompson. I think Taylor is a better putter than Davis. Obviously, he's elite there, but he's like a young DJ loping around out there. Like, he's a big guy, he bombs it. He's got that bowed wrist. They putt with like a similar putter. He's not the iron player, obviously, DJ is yet. Doesn't have the wins DJ has yet. But he's got something about him. You agree with that, Ryan? He's got something about him. You think he wins this year? Because he's played awfully well to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think most everyone was like, once he got out there, that he would win relatively quickly. And for those that don't know, Taylor's dad is the director of golf at Shadow Creek, and Taylor plays some pretty serious money games back in the thing. So he knows pressure way before he got on the PGA Tour. And he's a good dude and was very nice to me. And I mean, he's just he's a good dude and obviously super talented. He'll win eventually. I think it's just only a matter of time, but yeah, obviously a tough finish, especially to knock yourself out of the Masters.
He's got a slew of top 20s already. I mean, just a slew of them. I mean, he can go off the tee. He's just got to get his iron game gets a little more polished up, and he'll be fine. I think the rest of it is already is good enough to win. All right, I want to ask you about Rory. Miscut. He wants to forget about this week, I'm sure, at least on the golf course. I don't know how the board meetings went. But I waited for him. I walked with him on Wednesday late. Him and Maverick McNealy played 9 holes. And I ran out there and just followed around. And, you know, he just looked tired. You know, Rory's taken on a lot, Colt, as you know, off the course. He's the face of this for the PGA Tour and all these changes that are happening. And so he's got to sit in all these meetings and he's got to answer all these questions to other players. Man, it's got to take its toll. This is the first week that I feel like it looked like it took its toll to some degree on Rory. I mean, he just looked like he was exhausted. And it showed with his play on the golf course. There's 4 weeks to the Masters. I think he just needs to go take like 2 weeks off, refresh. I'm not talking to anybody. I'm coming back. I'm focused on my game. I'll answer questions after I win the green jacket. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm definitely not worried about him. It might have took a toll on him. You know, I was also worried about a lot of the guys that were in contention at Bay Hill battling out that tough golf course. It takes a lot out of you.
Sure, yeah.
And you're going into another very tough golf course at the flagship event of the PGA Tour, $25 million purse. Now, you know, Scottie Scheffler played well at Bay Hill, played well this week. Tyrrell Hatton played very well at Bay Hill, played well this week. So, obviously, those guys, it didn't affect them. But with everything Rory has, you know, took upon, it probably has taken a toll on him. He obviously is not very comfortable with the driver, from what it sounds like, either. So, it'll take some time, but I'm not one bit worried about Rory. You know, I was at the Seminole Pro member a couple weeks ago, Monday, talked to his dad afterwards, and he's like, his game's coming. You can see it. So this is one of those weeks. Like I said, the golf course, if you're just a slight bit off, it can make you look really, really bad. You know, those fairways are a lot narrower than the ones they're used to playing on the PGA Tour week in and week out. And they had some rough this week, which I love. I love that it made these guys actually hit fairways. You know, Augusta National, much more forgiving off the tee. It's a golf course. I think if you were going to design a golf course for Rory McIlroy to play well at, it would probably be Augusta National.
Yep.
So I think he'll be ready to go here in a few weeks. And if he can, you know, he's got some scar tissue there. There's no doubt. If he can get past having to answer all the questions about winning the Grand Slam and everything like that, he should go play very well there.
What do you think, Ryan? You look at the comments in the media room, you know, the question about the driver. I was kind of a little un-Rory-like. You know, it was indirect, kind of a little probe at TaylorMade. I wish we could just play the old stuff. And, you know, I was a little surprised that came out of Rory's mouth in the press room. How'd it land for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Colt on this one. No, I don't think anyone's really worried about Rory, but it is. I'm sure it's going to take some adjustment time to be a spokesperson and do that. I'm sure he's going to be happy to have a lot of the scheduling stuff and all that kind of stuff behind him, obviously, but that's just going to be a part. I mean, it's a part of everyone's golf world right now. Obviously he takes on a huge part of it, but at the Masters, it's going to be the same questions about live guys and what the PGA Tour looks like going forward and those kind of things. So he's got to find a way to balance it. I'm sure it takes some time, but I mean, he's Rory McIlroy. He's going to be fine. He'll figure it out. And, you know, if it's, It again, if this was the week that he played Bay Hill, he's dealt with all this stuff. They had a 7-hour meeting and he kind of like and was struggling with the driver. And it kind of was like, OK, this is not my week.
Yeah.
But I think no one's worried that he's not going to figure it out. He's got to find a balance of being the spokesperson in the face of the tour and working on his game.
No other sport, other athlete is taking on the responsibilities that he is right now. You know, it's just what he's doing off the course and the time that he's probably having to spend with other professionals. I mean, it's exhausting, man. It's like he probably feels like he's got employees, like he's got 70 employees that might be pissed off at him because now they don't feel like they have as much opportunity to get into these elevated events next year. I mean, I know there's a lot of them, right? And they're gonna come to some of them. You know, maybe they talk to Jay, maybe they whoever, but it just seems like Rory's gonna have to. He's already, I'm sure, have had a lot of conversations about it with some of these guys that are a little PO'd, Colt, about where things are going in the 2024 with, you know, the elevated events and smaller fields, no cut. A lot of guys pissed off as far as what I'm hearing.
Yeah, listen, I would probably think he's probably tired of having to answer the same question over and over. You know, but he is the face of the PGA Tour right now. He's the spokesman. And all these players, they want to know what's going on. They want to know these details. So they're going to be coming to Rory. They're going to be coming to Peter Malnati and trying to figure it out. It sucks. You know, it's probably like the same thing for you and Ryan and myself. Like, we're probably tired of talking about LIV, but that's just part of the business we're in now. We're paid to talk about golf. This is what we do. I went to the dentist the other day, and I was like, finally, I'm going to get an hour away from not having to talk about this. And the hygienist goes, hey, I'm really getting into golf. What do you think about this LIV thing? I'm like, damn it. I thought this was going to be the 1 hour I get to wait where I don't have to talk about this. But, you know, that's the role Rory's took on. It's not going to change for a while, but I'm with y'all. I mean, he's probably going to be very excited to have this week off.
Yeah.
I know he's going to Augusta National to play a couple of days and just get away from everything. Focus on the game and get ready because the Masters is just a few weeks away and he's one of the favorites as he should be.
And to be fair, he has paid him not himself, the top players handsomely by adjusting the tour to no cut events and elevated kind of stuff. So there is a downside, but there's also a large upside.
Yes, there's a very large upside.
This is what they had to do, though. I mean, the PGA Tour didn't have a choice. I mean, you can criticize maybe things up to this point, taking the call, not taking the call, this or that, but they didn't have a choice. I mean, they had to protect home base. They had to protect. They can't afford to have any more of these guys leaving. These guys got to stay. The sponsors that they have, the elevated events, and then from there, there's a trickle down, and it's not ideal, right? It's a corporate restructure. A lot of people who are in corporate restructures, I've been in them, and you lose your job. A lot of people lose their jobs in those. And so in this case, no one lost their job, but the entryway, Ryan, into these elevated events is certainly going to be a little bit more difficult for a lot of them.
I mean, you know how I feel. Like there is, I mean, I get it. I know why the tour did it, right? Like I get it. There were also, they were finding ways to pay their top players, with cut events and the PIP and all that kind of stuff. Just pay them. I don't know. But I get it. Doesn't mean I have to like it. I think it will be interesting to see how it plays out. And if they adjust from there, can you get from 75th or whatever the cutoff is, you know, into these elevated events? Is there any turnover? What percentage of turnover? All of those kind of things. I think it stinks. WGCs didn't work for a reason. I mean, I don't know. I guess there's maybe no drama. The only drama for me as a golf fan this week was Friday on the cut, right? Like coming back Saturday morning and those kind of things. This week, Andy Johnson from the Fried Egg tweeted out in the leaderboard really wouldn't have changed that much. I mean, it would have been a snooze fest from start to finish. But it was a snooze fest with a cut, so I'm not trying to pretend like no cut would have made it any better. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. I get why the tour did it. Do I have to like it? No. It stinks. It stinks. No cuts event stinks. It kind of is going to make Sunday the only important day, but I also understand. Top players are watching their friends go over there, get guaranteed money when they tee it up.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
My question is, when have we started to worry about the top players making cuts? Like they're saying they want their stars there all 4 days. Are we really worried about Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, these guys? Like how it happens it's so rare for these guys to miss cuts. Like I think that's the biggest cop out answer is, oh, we want to guarantee our stars. But then on the other hand, like if Rory McIlroy's in 63rd place on Sunday teeing off number 10, it's not like 10,000 people are going to show up and watch him play golf. I'm sorry, but there's only one person that happens to, and it's Tiger Woods. I'm with Ryan on this. I hate the taking away the cut. I think the cut's a massive part of pro golf. I mean, look what Tom Hoge just did. He made the cut on the number and finished third. Like, I mean, he was one person and one shot away from being down the road and that stuff not happening. But now it's like, you know what? I just got a great opportunity to go out there and work on my game under pressure and possibly find something to carry over next week. And he damn near had a chance to win the golf tournament. Like, goes out, makes history, breaks course record, finishes third, makes over $1 million. I hate the no cut thing. I would have been fine with him going to, you know, 100 man fields with 50 person cuts. You know, I said, if you're going to do the limited fields, no cuts, 78, all right, well, only 40 guys make points and get paid. So yeah. Therefore you still Cole, have to actually play.
Cole, I have a question for you. You would know. So like this week would be a great example, right? Like Rory, let's say this is a no cut event. He shoots a billion the first 2 days. I would assume he's just happy to have 2 days off. He doesn't want to go out there and shoot. Like, he's struggling with his game. He's not going to make any more, like, drastic place in a no-cut event. It's going to be 50 grand or 60 grand, irrelevant to Rory. Is there some part of him, like, I know he doesn't want to miss the cut, but once he's missed the cut and he's gone through this stuff, doesn't he go like, oh, good, I get a weekend off. I never get a weekend off. Like, yeah, and kind of reset instead of having to come back and play two more days when you know you're struggling?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to that. Obviously, there's the side of I get to get away. I don't have to talk to the media for a few days. I can go work on my game. I can rest. I can hang out with my family. But then there's the guy who's like, man, I feel like my game's really close. Mm-hmm. If I could get two more days in competition, it would be a huge deal because I feel like I'm that close. I'm hitting it great on the range. Everything's going well in practice. It just hasn't, you know, transferred over to competition yet. So there's that as well. But, man, I'm with you. I thought the WGCs were boring. I mean, obviously, Tiger in contention winning how many ever he did was great. But it's just not the same. Like, I wish they would have sat back and just let this thing play out a little longer. Because if you look at Phoenix, you look at L.A., and you look at Bay Hill, I mean, can we ask for much more?
Right. Well, okay, let me play the other side for a second. Could it be that – I don't know this. I'm just – and I think about this all the time, which is kind of weird, but could it be that the tour lost leverage completely, a lot of leverage, right? They lost a lot of their players. So now, okay, we can't lose anymore. So we have to listen to them, number one. And then number two, could it be with their sponsors? The sponsors are like, okay, now you've lost them. How do we know you're not going to lose some more? And so We believe in what we're doing. We want to be a good partner. We want to do these things, but we need to have some assurance that these guys are going to be here.
Listen, I've said it for the last several weeks. I mean, it's very apparent the top players have leverage now.
Yeah.
And they're calling the shots.
Yeah.
And because there is another option now.
But from the sponsors, too, they've lost leverage.
Yeah. But I would just say, like, as far as the players, I know Rory and Greg aren't on the best of terms. But if Rory McIlroy called up, you know, the head of the Saudi Golf and said, hey, I'm ready to come to live. What are you going to pay me? There would be an offer coming very, very quickly. And the same thing with Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, all those guys. And, you know, that does worry the PGA Tour, I would have to think, knowing that we can't afford to lose any of these stars. We got to do everything we can to keep them. And so now here's the stars being like, listen, we're not saying we're going to leave, but this is what we would really like to see happen. Yeah. And if people are saying that's not what's going on, I would really have to question them on that.
Oh, yeah, that's what's going on.
My frustration, guys, is they have found ways to pay these guys. Like, I mean, Tigers, Arena League, the PIP, like all of that is just a nice way of saying we're going to pay our best players.
Yeah.
And so that is my frustration, that the top players have used this leverage. They already used the leverage, and the tour has given it to them. And like Colt said, how often are we talking about events with the best players in the field not being at the top anyway? Like, it's just like, and the guys that would upset, I mean, Kurt Kitayama would have been in the field anyway. Upsets are going to happen at 78. The casual golf fan who watches the majors and the elevated events doesn't know the difference between Kurt Kitayama and the 400th ranked player any better, right? Prior to, they're like, oh, he's a no name, which we all know he's not, right? So it's like, I don't know what they're gaining. They're not one tournament a year, maybe with no cut that the top. I don't know. I don't know what they're gaining. The top players in the world are the top players in the world for a reason. They're going to be at the top of the leaderboard most of the time.
Yeah, no, those are good points. Like Xander, I'm just looking Xander as a name right now. Like he's missed four cuts in probably 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, somewhere in there. know, just as a name guy that you know is part of that nucleus. I mean, Rory missed the cut this week.
This is the one golf course. I keep going back to the golf course. This is the one golf course where it drives these guys nuts. And it, you know, you could have – it was like after all this came out, the worst thing happened. You had John Rahm withdraw. You had Rory McIlroy miss the cut. Like, that sucked. And it's like, okay, this is why we need events with no cuts, because now they would still be around. But like I said, we don't need to worry about these guys missing cuts. Like, that just doesn't happen. They're good.
Yeah. No, I'm with you guys. I want the cut, too. I just – trying to look at it from, you know, the other side, and it just seems like they're just obviously the security is there for layering in another level of security because the players have the leverage, and I'm sure the sponsors to some degree, there's been some tough conversations there too, obviously Honda leaving and others. All right, last question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but true or false, I'm going to say within the next 15 months there's a LIV player that goes public that wants out.
True.
True.
Yeah. I think that's.
Do you have any names? I mean, you said that pretty quickly. I mean, it sounds like you already know.
That's happening. That's going to happen. The question is, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
I think the question is, I think that's relatively certain. The real question is anybody going. Any real brand names going. And I think the interesting part will be like good young talent that's like 80th, mm-hmm. right? And they go through a year and they're like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know? I hate to say a name because he's not associated in any way with LIV, but like Taylor Montgomery, you know, can't get into the any NFL he can. But I'm just saying, like, as an example, young, talented, all those kind of things. And he's like, dude, I got to play all these, you know, and I can't climb my way into it.
Yep.
Is he a guy that is susceptible to being, you know, taken? And a lot of the young guys from college, I mean, I've always said that LIV, I don't understand that. I mean, I get having some name brands, but like, you know, all these young guys playing non-elevated events, the number one amateur in the world, let's say Sargent comes in, he's got to play Puerto Rico and Corrales and all those things. And he's like, what am I doing?
Right.
You know, I can get up and make $50 million today. You know, like
Pearson Cootie.
There is two sides to this story.
Yeah. Pearson Cootie was on. Yeah. He was on the pod last week and we asked him, did you get offered from LIV? And he said, yeah, we got offered a lot of money, turned down a lot of money. And Pearson, talented player, obviously extremely talented player. But this was his dream, and he's coming to the PGA Tour, and he's probably going to be similar to, you know, Taylor Montgomery, that kind of young, high-caliber player. But Pearson Cootie,
I'm not sure that is the answer for every 24-year-old or 22-year-old coming out of college, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're going to go. I mean, and I don't blame – James Piatt is from Michigan State, so go green. But I don't blame him at all. He got, like, four or five exemptions, missed every cut, and got offered seven figures to go to LIV. Who wouldn't go?
Right.
He's like, I wasn't sure I could make it on the PGA Tour. Yeah. Good for you, dude. Like, see you later. So I don't know, you know, Norman Jung at the beginning, like, and he's struggling when he lost his Korn Ferry card and LIV was a thing back then and they came and signed him. What? I don't know. I don't know who wouldn't go. It takes a very good for Pearson, mature young man to turn that down money. I just don't know what the percentage of those players is that would turn it down. It's got to be 50-50 at best.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm surprised they haven't gone after more of the young guys. Like Gordon Sargent's the first one that pops in my head. Our guest on Subpar Tuesday is Akshay Bhatia. You know, I asked him flat out, like, have they reached out at all? I mean, here's a kid with a lot of flair. He's got a massive following on Instagram. He's 21 years old, but he's like, dude, my dream is to play the PGA Tour. So I respect those guys when, you know, that's it. They grew up. I mean, Max Homa's the same way. He's like, look, you can't buy my dreams. You know, my whole life I've been wanting to be on the PGA Tour. I want to win major championships and play against the best players in the world. And they've stuck to that. But, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, the word with Dustin Johnson is they kept coming. He kept saying no, 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 no. And then that number just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And finally he's like, God, I got to take it. I mean, it's just – when you get those kind of numbers thrown at you, it's hard to turn it down.
I always say, Travis, if if a Liv goes to Monday qualifiers, I'm going to say no. Okay.
But, yeah.
But there is a number. I guarantee you that it's a yes.
Everyone has a number.
Right. Right. Like Faherty might have, I don't know, David. I'm just saying, like, he probably was like, yeah, I don't know. Oh, yeah, maybe so. Maybe
better put a little, they better put a little money into their telecast decks because it did. You know, I'm just saying it's, you know, a little bumpy what I watched a couple weeks ago. All right. So they're playing this week. We got Valspar next week. Good field. I was just looking at it, some of the players that are going to be over there. So, guys, I think can't thank you enough. First live Stripe Show pod. You guys are the best. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. Love following you. Monday Q on Twitter. Go get him. Colt Nose on Twitter. CBS. You do a great job out there, Colt. Thanks for to both of you guys for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, real quick on the Valspar, at least two guys for special temporary membership. Three guys. I think Cole Hammer got an exemption too. Cole Hammer, Ryan Gerard, Minwoo Lee, all like super, super close on special temporary membership. So like life-changing, career-changing type stuff that could happen there.
Gerard's like he's on a heater right now.
Yeah, just got an exemption. Like while we're on the, he sent me a text that it was possibly going to happen, and he just got one. So. And good for him.
Who wins the Masters? Final question.
Out of the top 10. And, yeah.
Who wins the Masters? Final question. Oh.
I'm going Rory.
I mean, it's very Corey calm, Connors. Just to stay on brand, it's Corey Connors.
Dude, I don't know if you pick Corey Connors more or we do over at Subpar as like our dark horse every single week. We take Corey Connors every week.
Yeah, Corey Travis, you laugh. I say this to everyone. I make it semi as a joke. He's finished. He's lost to 13 people in the last 3 years at the Masters. Okay, so it's not totally out of the question.
I'm worried about Will. I'm worried about my boy Zal Torres, you know, coming back. I don't think he's feeling any pain, but there's a new move that he's trying. Is he in between? You know, I worry about that stuff. Trying to get a little more on top of it, a little less to the side. You know, made the cut this week, but they're talking with his team. It's all building up to the Masters. Corey Connors. Yeah, we do the gambling show on Tuesday, and you know, you run the numbers and you know, driver, irons, check. And what was he? Just he was in the hunt at API, right? Was it API or? And I was watching him, and it was just. Typical Connors, right? You're cheering for him and the couple vanilla short game shots and he hits it to like 20 feet and makes bogey. Just like if someone would teach that guy how to chip and pitch, like he'd be a world beater, Cole. A world beater. Because his ball striking is so damn good.
I love his game. There's no doubt. There's a lot of, it seems like a lot of those, there's quite a few guys that if they could learn to chip and pitch, it'd be scary. Obviously Morikawa, Hovland, Corey Connors, but they're going to be fine guys.
Yeah, they're just fine. Hovland looked bad. I tell you what, I was on your show last week, Colt, and I was talking about some of the changes. But I tell you what, over the weekend, Hovland hit some very nice little finesse shots around the green. His take, he had to feel like coming out of here this week, like because we know his driver and irons are elite. But he hit some nice just finesse, trajectory, spin, controlling everything. So hopefully that comes around for him. And if it does, look out. Look out.
You got it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll do it again.
You got it. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.